Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. This debate continues in America over the Keystone XL pipeline. It looks as if, given the clearances that have taken place, that this might actually move ahead. We have covered this intensely for a while now, from every side and angle. Many people do not want to see this built. Think it's an alternative way to make energy happen in America. We've talked to people in the Indigenous Environmental Network in Canada and the United States and in others, and people who are in the petroleum industry. Well, today we continue that debate because it is coming down to decision time very soon. And we're going to talk today with Michael Whatley. That's here. It's Whatley, correct? Executive Vice President for Consumer Energy Alliance, who helped has been in the trenches advocating for the Keystone XL pipeline since 2008, and Eric Pica. It's Pica?
Pica.
I should know that. There are Picas in Baltimore. Eric Pica. Pica, who is President of the Friends of Earth. Eric, good to have you with us as well.
Great to be here.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can email us. And you can also log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So let me just begin. We're in a very confusing state right now. And let me just ask you both this question. It seems to me that if you look at what people are saying, like former Governor Schweitzer Montana was saying, was that they don't need government approval. This is going to begin anyway. All they have to do is build the pipelines. This has been built in the United States already, and tar sands have been explored, and oil coming out of tar sands in Canada in a much more intense way. All they have to do is just truck it or train it across the border and then put it in the pipelines, and we're done. So I'm just curious about your take on that, Eric.
Well, this pipeline's crossing the United States-Canadian border, and so it's going to be a major facilitator in the mining, the drilling of the tar sands. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about rail, but frankly, the rail infrastructure isn't robust enough in the United States to handle the expansion that Canada wants to do in the Alberta tar sands. And so it's a little bit of a misnomer to say that, you know, it'll come either by pipeline or by rail. It's just not economical right now, nor is there enough rail to exploit these tar sands at the rate that Canada wants to exploit them at.
So you think that when Governor Schweitzer and other folks are saying that, and I've had some emails about that this morning, that saying, isn't this just happening? We're just kind of debating over a minor issue at the moment. You think it's not?
No, and in fact, you know, Canada is trying to build several major pipelines out of Alberta, and there is significant resistance going on across Canada and in the United States with the Keystone XL pipeline to keep those pipelines from being constructed. And so, you know, what you have here is you have the Alberta tar sands, which are essentially landlocked, and they need routes to get out to either the Pacific or Atlantic Oceans for export. And, you know, most of those major routes are being blocked at some point or another. And in fact, if you look at the business community and exactly what they say about the importance of the Keystone XL pipeline, this pipeline ends up being the key piece of infrastructure that needs to be built in order to start unlocking the full potential that Canada wants to see in drilling and mining for these for the tar sands oil. So, you know, this fight is not lost by any stretch. And in fact, you can tell by the fact Canada's consistently downgrading the amount of tar sands that they're going to want to drill from 7 million to 6 million barrels. It keeps on going down based on the resistance that they're receiving.
So, Michael Whatley, what would you say about that?
Well, I'd say that the State Department just issued a major environmental review of the pipeline project just about 10 days ago, in which they said the exact opposite. They said that the oil sands are going to be developed, and they said that that oil is going to find its way into the world markets. And they also said that the United States refinery complex down in Houston is going to get oil into it, whether it comes from the oil sands or not. So the most expedient way, the most cost-effective way, and frankly the safest way, protecting the environment, to get the oil into these refinery complex down in Houston that's going to be used by the United States is to build Keystone XL pipeline. You know, Eric mentions that you've got protests up in Canada. Well, certainly you have some protests on the pipelines, but the fact is that the Alberta government the British Columbia government and the federal Canadian government have all indicated that they're going to allow these projects to move forward, and the companies that are working on them are getting ready to go into construction mode right now. So this oil is going to be developed. It is going to find its way into a market. And the question that we need to ask is, do we want to put it on boats and send it to China and then replace the oil that it would have with the Houston refinery complex coming in from Venezuela and the Middle East? We don't think that that's the case. We want to see it on safer pipelines coming down to the United States, where we can use it to develop our own economy.
Eric, let me let you hold that thought. We have to take a very quick break and let you jump right back in as soon as we come back, okay, to respond. We're going to go to break with Roberta Flack's Killing Me Softly. She was born on this day in 1937.
Killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Open face, and Mackie has got a knife, but not in such an obvious place.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and as part of our daily look at this day in history, that, of course, is Mack the Knife from the great play by Bertolt Brecht, who was born on this day in 1898. We are here with Michael Whatley, who we heard before we went to break, Executive Vice President for Consumer Energy Alliance, who has been in the trenches advocating for the Keystone XL Pipeline's approval since 2008. And Eric Pica is President of Friends of the Earth. And Eric, you were going to jump right in. I want you to do that.
Yeah, so there are two points I wanted to make. First is that this whole notion that this is going to be, this is tar sands oil is going to be used in America, is just wrong. The head of TransCanada, who's trying to build this pipeline, was asked to testify before Congress and was asked directly this question: will the oils be used in the United States? And he could not testify that it was going to. And even the State Department's EIS said that this is going to be subject to world markets and exported wherever. So, you know, this isn't about you. This isn't about tar sands being used in America. This is about Canada using the United States as the pipeline to the rest of the world. So I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way. And then as we talk about the State Department's environmental impact statement, you know, Friends of the Earth has some significant concerns about the credibility of the report. The contractor who wrote this report for the State Department, Environmental Resource Management, or ERM, failed to disclose on their conflict of interest forms with the State Department that they had in fact worked with TransCanada over the last 3 years previously, and that they were also a part of various organizations, most importantly the American Petroleum Institute, they're a member of, who has spent $6 million advocating for the construction of this pipeline in 2013. And so there are significant questions and serious questions that Friends of the Earth and many others have about some of the validity of the conclusions in the State Department's Environmental Impact Statement of Keystone XL, because they keep on hiring contractors who are part and parcel with the oil industry.
So, Michael Whatley, is there an issue with transparency here at the very least?
Well, no. This is the fifth different environmental review that the State Department has conducted, and they have taken public comments and gone through the process on this for 5 years. This is the most studied pipeline project in the history of the world, and the conclusion in every single one of those studies is the same. This will be the safest pipeline ever built in America, and that the environmental impact of moving oil through this pipeline, as opposed to putting it on boats coming in from the Middle East or putting on trains from Canada down through the United States, this is the most environmentally sensitive way to be able to move that. And they also said it'll have the lowest carbon emissions coming through it as well. So, you know, the State Department has done, you know, a significant amount of work on this thing. The Inspector General has been looking at this before. They've concluded before that there is no conflict of interest. They've got another report that they're preparing now. We expect that it's going to say that there's no conflict of interest. And, you know, I don't think that too many folks in the oil industry would regard, you know, the Obama administration as overly friendly to the industry. So for the Obama administration to come out and say there's going to be no significant impact and that this is the safest pipeline ever built, I think you need to take that seriously.
So, Eric, please respond to that before I have another specific question here.
Well, I mean, the president has, this is the State Department report. So, you know, from our understanding, you know, this hasn't been, you know, the president as well as Secretary Kerry have not reviewed the report yet. And they're waiting on this national interest determination, which is a 90-day review of the federal agencies. President Obama in his June 2013 speech said that, you know, he would not approve this pipeline if it amounted to significant climate impacts. And we think that, you know, despite the fact that this report was drafted by an oil industry insider organization, we think there's at least enough in there where the president can say no to this pipline. You know,
actually,
the climate impacts are between
one at a time. Eric, finish.
Up to 5.4 million vehicles on the road is what the carbon emissions of this pipeline are going to be. And then on the safety front, you know, TransCanada has a record of building pipelines. Their first Keys pipe in the first year. We know that pipelines leak. All you have to do is look at the Kalamazoo River spill, which is one of the most expensive cleanups in U.S. history, which was tar sands oil, almost $1 billion. We had the Arkansas spill. We had a farmer discover a 20,000-barrel spill in North Dakota. You see these pipelines spill over and over again. And yes, rail is out there, but you know, neither of these are safe. And so, you know, what Friends of the Earth has been advocating for the longest time, we just got to keep the oil in the ground. We need to transition ourselves off of this, particularly this really dirty oil. Let's make no bones about it. This is about clear-cutting forests, scraping land away, taking out a sludge like material and turning this into fuel or whatever. This is some of the dirtiest stuff in the world. We just got to keep it in the ground.
Mike, you were trying to say what?
I apologize. I just think it's very telling that the State Department report said that the carbon emissions from moving the oil through this pipeline are going to be significantly less than the carbon emissions of getting oil to those Houston refinery complexes from other sources, including trains or boats coming in from the Middle East.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of questions here. Now, we have some people writing in. You can join us here at 410-319-8888 to weigh in. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Jump into our Facebook pages. We have a couple of them here. A call called in asking, there are other questions here too, but let me just start with a simple one. What does XL mean? When he said Keystone XL, people want to know what XL stands for.
I would say it's an extra large pipeline, but I don't think that there actually is a meaning for Keystone XL. It's just a designation for another pipeline being built by TransCanada.
And so another quick tweet came in wanting to know, from College Andrews, say wanting to know that we have to build this, that the pipeline has to be built because we need energy. What's the alternative, A? And then right after that, what about the stories of leaks that have come in from Alberta, Canada, 12,000 12,000 barrels at least have leaked out in Alberta and have
I think that, yeah, those are both really good questions. And the first is that the EPA, the Department of Energy, the Department of Transportation, and, you know, hundreds of different studies from the private sector and think tanks all around the country all acknowledge the fact that 99% of the fuel that we use in the transportation system right now is gasoline and diesel, and that we need to be able to get, you know, alternative fuels online, but we're not going to have those online in a massive replacement over the next 20, 30, 40 years. So we are going to have to rely on oil to get our transportation mode to help run the economy. You know, in terms of pipeline safety, you know, pipelines are the safest way for us to move oil. They are the most economical way for us to move oil. And this is going to be, according to the State Department, the safest pipeline ever built in the United States. You know, TransCanada has agreed to 57 different safety conditions on top of current federal law that's implemented by the Department of Transportation in NHTSA. So, you know, we're pretty excited about what is going to happen here in terms of the pipeline safety. But you're right. You know, there are always going to be concerns that associate with it. But we've got to have the fuel to drive our economy.
Eric.
Yeah, no, I find it ironic that, you know, the oil industry argues against fuel efficiency. They argue against battery hybrids, and they argue against advanced other types of fuels. And then at the same time, they argue that we have to have oil for the foreseeable future. And then they have their cake and eat it too by building a pipeline. They pollute where the oil is being withdrawn, and then the Cancer Alley down in the Gulf of Mexico, where all these refiners are at, are getting hurt. And then in between, you've got farmers and ranchers and cities who are experiencing the leaks of this tremendous infrastructure. So look, the president in the United States needs to make a decision at some point. Are we serious about trying to get off oil? And the best way, the first way to really start doing this is to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline. The president's been pretty clear. He says, if this has significant climate impacts, I'm going to reject it. We think there's enough within the State Department report to say that there is significant climate impacts of this pipeline, and the president should deny it. We just can't continue to keep on this kind of treadmill of oil dependency that's being fostered upon the American people.
Let me open the phones here. Then I want to come back to some of the question I had about leaks and some other questions, because as you were responding, I looked up some reports. I just want to talk very specifically about that. 410-319-8888. Teresa, you're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I believe that we need to leave the oil in the ground. We need to move to clean, renewable energy, solar and wind power.
So, Teresa, you raised this issue again, and Eric, you raised this issue a moment ago. Let me shift the discussion just a little because of what Teresa said and what was raised earlier. And let's talk about our energy future for a minute. And I think a lot of what the debate we're having right now about the pipeline, besides the arguments over the spills and the environmental issues, which I want to come back to, and the issue about where this world is going, is the energy future. I mean, you said a little bit ago, Michael Whatley, that we will not see this transition to alternative fuels over this next 20, 30 years, so we need the gas. And my sense is, Eric Pica, you're saying that we can make this transition in the next 20 to 30 years. Let's talk about that for a moment. Eric?
Yeah, I mean, my sense is that this is climate science kicking in. Right? The Earth's climate is changing, and it's changing rapidly. We're emitting more carbon pollution in the air, and that we just don't have enough time to wait for an oil industry to kind of grant us permission to start dealing with climate change. And so, if you listen to Dr. James Hansen, the noted NASA climate scientist, he's now retired and teaching, he says that if you open up the Canadian tar sands and you exploit at the rate that Canada wishes to exploit and the oil industry wishes to exploit, he says game over for climate change. And so we need to start thinking about, what's going to happen in 20, 30 years. I mean, I'm in the D.C. area, the Chesapeake Bay. We have rising sea levels. There's a lot of cities around the Chesapeake Bay, around the East Coast, that if we have additional warming and sea level rise, that just won't be there. And so it's time that we start taking seriously this threat of climate change. And the first thing to do is to say no to the Keystone Pipeline, say no to the tar sands coming out of Alberta, but then figure out, at the same time, what it is that we need to go. Some of the fastest growing energy in the world right now is renewable energy, solar and wind in particular. And, look, it's not a perfect, I'm sure that Michael's going to say we can't fuel our cars by solar or wind. We can't do that yet, right? There is a tremendous amount of innovation going on in the transportation sector with battery hybrids, with all electric vehicles that someday we'll be able to power off the grid. That's a clean, renewable energy grid. But, the industry, the oil industry, keeps on fighting it and opposing it.
So, and Michael, is there any question in your mind about the climate change issue here?
Well, what I would say is this, that in terms of what the future of the transportation sector can hold, in terms of alternative and renewable fueled vehicles, that's probably the one place Eric and I actually agree on, is that as a country, I do believe that we're going to be able to develop the alternative fuels and the alternative vehicles that we need to be able to move off of fossil energy. My only concern is that it's going to take a while. It may take 20 years, it may take 30 years or more. And in the meantime, if we set up a system where we're going to starve the economy and we're going to shut it down because we're going to drive fuel prices up by restricting, our ability to get affordable, reliable energy in here. You know, we saw what happened in 2008 when gas prices spiked up to $4 plus per gallon. It triggered the recession that we're still trying to find our way out of. So, you know, we have to be able to have the transportation to be able to move ourselves around. You know, every time a single mother needs to fill up her car and able to take her kids to school and go to work or go to the doctor or go to the grocery store, you know, that's not a trip that she can shut down when gas prices go up $1 a gallon. You know, so every dollar that she's putting into the car because of higher fuel prices, a dollar that's really coming out of the United States economy. And to make it worse, when we're buying the oil from Venezuela and we're buying the oil from the Middle East, we're just taking that dollar and we're sending it to overseas economies to help them there. We really think that keeping these dollars and keeping the economy afloat here in the United States and in North America is a better path.
So, Eric, okay. let you jump in. We just got a tweet from Mark who just said, what? That triggered the recession? Isn't that historical revisionism? Eric?
Well, I mean, there's two pieces there.
Several,
Canada's still a foreign country. So let's not, the dollars from the Keystone XL pipeline are going to go to Canada. And, you know, the worst part of this is that this pipeline is going to run through the heartland of America over some very important water resources and infrastructure. And, you know, it's going to be that this oil is going to be exported out to China, to Europe, to South America. And, you know, these dollars aren't staying in the United States. So let's except for maybe the refining. So let's make that. Canada's still a foreign country. And then when it comes to the economy, you know, I think there is a lot of Wall Street malfeasance that occurred that triggered off the recession. I mean, we didn't have to bail out the oil industry over the failing economy. And in fact, you know, the oil industry ended up kind of just kind of profiting and profiting and profiting. You know, it was the fact that Wall Street collapsed and they were making bad bets on a lot of bad infrastructure and a lot of housing and just gaming the system that caused a recession. That seems to be quite revisionist history.
So what happens, let me, from your perspective, Michael Whatley, if the president says no to the international crossing, what happens next?
Well, I think Congress will certainly take up legislation at that point. I think it's very telling that you have senators like Mark Warner in Virginia, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, Mark Pryor in Arkansas, Mark Begich up in Alaska, Kay Hagan in North Carolina, who strongly support Keystone XL. As a matter of fact, the last vote that they took in the Senate got 62 votes in support of Keystone XL. You have strong bipartisan majorities in the House of Representatives as well. And so I expect, you know, based on the fact that 65% of the American people support this pipeline, you would see a congressional push that would happen on a bipartisan basis in Congress to try and override that decision. There's a lot of folks now who are, you know, on the Republican side are trying to push this for a partisan issue. A lot of Democrats who are saying, let the process work its way out. But if the president does say no, I think you'll see legislation moving very quickly to try and override that.
And Eric, I mean, if let's say it didn't happen, I mean, that what I was asking you earlier, I mean, when I read reports that I'm just pulling up these reports now from Alberta and what's happening in other places, the spills are taking place, especially in around native lands in Canada.
Right.
There's a lot of tar sands oil you can't clean up. So does it make a difference if you're from the environmental perspective? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no. Look, it makes a difference. And, you know, what Michael failed to say was that the First Nations, the Indigenous peoples in Canada, are fighting these pipelines tooth and nail. And they have some very tremendous legal hooks to make sure that several of these pipelines stay bottled up. And they're also the ones that are receiving the, you know, the cancer-causing chemicals that are coming from the refining process. It's their waters that are being destroyed. And so there's a lot of resistance going on in Alberta and in Canada writ large when it comes to these pipelines. And yes, it does make a matter. It does make a difference, you know, to fight these pipelines. You know, there are 70,000 people in the United States here who have volunteered to commit acts of civil disobedience, you know, just like what occurred 3 years ago outside the White House. And, you know, there are people around this country who are willing to fight for the first time against, in a significant way, against the oil industry, against the coal industry, because we have to keep this stuff in the ground. It's just, it, it's incompatible with a climate and an environment over the next 50 years that's livable if we extract this tar sands and burn it.
We don't know where this is going to go. We can see where it goes. But part of the question here, it seems to me, is we're not really having a debate in this country of what our energy future should be. You've seen a lot of people who oppose this pipeline, but obviously, as you both were saying, there's huge support, especially from the industry and from unions that want to see this pipeline built. Let me come back to some very specific questions here. What Eric was saying earlier, Michael, can you respond to that the vast majority of this oil, if in fact it does get through the pipeline, doesn't end up in the United States anyway, it's all for export to other countries where it'll go anyway?
We do not as a country export any meaningful levels of oil whatsoever, and we're certainly not going to start. We import 9 million barrels of oil a day. The last thing that a company, any company, is going to do is transport oil through a 1,700-mile pipeline and then load it onto a boat that's small enough to get through the Panama Canal and take it all the way through the Panama Canal over to the Asian market. What they're going to do is take it on a 500-mile pipeline over to the Pacific coast, load it up on a Supermax tanker, and take it over to China there. It's going to get more oil to the market faster, and it's going to be, a lot cheaper for them. So what's going to happen is that the oil is going to get taken down to the Gulf Coast refinery complex, and it's going to replace Middle Eastern and Venezuelan oil. Now, right now, we make a lot of diesel, more diesel than we need in the United States. It's basically a byproduct in the refining process. When you refine gasoline, you get diesel as a byproduct. We have more diesel than we need, and so we export that diesel to Europe and to South America where they've got markets for it. That already happens. It will continue to happen. And, yes, if this oil comes into the Houston complex, part of the refined product is going to be exported as diesel. But all that's going to do is replace diesel that's being exported today.
So, Eric?
Yeah, it's telling, right? The head of TransCanada was before Congress and was asked to testify under oath about would this oil be used in the United States. And he could not do so because, I guess, when you testify under oath, you subject yourself to perjury. That's what occurred in the congressional hearing. And, the State Department has said the same thing. And, look, we understand that the oil industry is one big global market, and that the oil and the refined products from the oil will end up going to whoever pays the highest price. And so to sit here and guarantee that, this stuff is going to be used in the United States, Russ Girling didn't want to testify before Congress that was going to hold true. So I'm not, I give, no hopes that, that this is going to be used in the U.S.
But what about the arguments back and forth over the dangers of to the environment in Canada, which is not our country, but those environmental dangers of getting oil out of tar sands, and B, people's arguments around whether or not it is safe in terms of leaks that could happen across the entire United States, if the potential of danger there is how much of a factor is that in this conversation, or should it be?
You saw in Nebraska of political process just kind of become really incendiary over the last couple of years over the threat of pipeline leaks going over the sand hills and the Ogallala Aquifer, which is one of the largest water aquifers in the United States, for fear that tar sands oil in particular acts differently when it leaks and spills in the water. And we saw this play out in Kalamazoo, in southwest Michigan, where there is a substantial pipe tar sands pipeline leak that was run by the company called Enbridge. And EPA sent in responders expecting this to be regular oil that would float up to the top and it would vapor off and they could collect it. Well, the tar sands oil is much heavier, and it ended up sinking to the bottom. And EPA didn't know what to do, one, because the company didn't timely report what was in that pipeline. But, they just don't have response that was prepared to deal with the tar sands. And this is 3 years later. It's one of the most expensive oil cleanups, tar sands oil cleanups in the country, almost $1 billion. This thing was supposed to be cleaned up in 6 months. We're now 3 years later. And so this is what happens when, you know, this is this new type of dirty, heavy, very dense, heavy crude oil or tar sands oil that's coming out of Alberta.
Mark, very quickly. Michael, I mean,
I'm sorry. I would say this, you know, that I mean, I'm glad that Eric brought up the Nebraska episode, because what happened was there were concerns that were raised locally with the governor and senators and others about going through the Sandhills region. So, you know, the Obama administration placed a lot of pressure on TransCanada, who agreed to reroute the route to take it around the Sandhills region. And now what you have is complete buy-in from the state. The governor is on board. They've already run a permit process there and granted a state permit and signed off on the new route. And you have, you know, overwhelming public support from the state of Nebraska. When you talk about the safety of this pipeline, you just have to go back to the five different environmental reviews, including the final environmental review we saw it last week, which says that this will be the safest pipeline ever built.
No, that, but go ahead. Go ahead, Eric. I mean, in the time we have left, and that's one of the things we'll bring up very early in the show, is you have concerns that who's making these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm pretty comfortable who's making the decisions, right? This is Secretary Kerry. This is President Obama. But unfortunately, the information that they're getting is coming from the Environmental Resource Management, which, you know, we believe lied on their conflict of interest forms and have been a part of the oil industry that is advocating for the approval of the pipeline. So the data that's getting put into the process is not accurate data. It's not good data. So that's our concern with what's going on at the State Department and with the consultant that is saying this is going to be one of the safest pipelines in the world, who's going to say, you know, that this is not going to impact climate change. I mean, there's just too many connections, too much business, too much money involved for ERM to be able to give us an unbiased report.
Well, this has been, clearly we'll see where this takes us in the coming weeks and months. And I think that we'll see when the decisions are made. They've been kind of really taking their time, and at least the White House has been taking its time, I think, for very political reasons, to come to a yes or a no. And I want to thank both of you for joining us here. You just heard Eric Pica. Eric is, of course, President of Friends of the Earth, and Michael Whatley, Executive Vice President for Consumer Energy Alliance, CEA. Good to have you both with us.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to go out with the Clash anniversary of this song, right? Called Police and Thieves, performed in 1977 on this day. Not my favorite band, but here they are.